Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 235. My name is Graham Elwood.
I'm Chris Mancini, and welcome to the Comedy Film Nerds Podcast. We're going to talk a lot about movies tonight.
Wow, yeah. Where did that guy come from?
I don't know.
From?
I got all excited. Like, it was our first show.
What? Welcome to the Comedy Film Nerds Podcast.
Yeah, you should be as excited as I am.
Yeah.
235 episodes.
And we're going to talk about movies today. Yeah. Like, this is the really?
I swear.
On this podcast?
Yes.
Okay.
Horror movies. We're going to talk about Gone Girl, Walk Among the Tombstones. We're going to talk about, and we're going to revisit Edge of Tomorrow and a couple of other movies.
And you did you were at Shriek Fest?
And I was at Shriek Fest. Yeah, we're going to talk about that as well. And it was Neil's first time behind the mic. We're going to talk about that.
Oh, he's, my goodness gracious! So you're going to hear some Neil.
Yeah,
it's coming up in a future episode.
Yes, that'll be a nice bonus episode.
Yeah, I know we didn't get to go to Shriek Fest last year because it was on the same weekend as Podfest, but this year you guys were able to go.
Yeah, it was great. It's such a great festival. Yeah. It's not a huge festival. It's a kind of a nice size, but it's where we met our guest, too.
It is where we met our guest. thanks. I just want to say this. Thanks to everybody, again, for all of the cool emails and photos and stuff like that about PodFest.
It was great. We're still coming down from it and recovering.
It was great, and...
Everyone loved the hotel.
I was just at the hotel, picking up some stuff, and the hotel was like, God, your podcast fans, they're so nice and polite, and they cleaned up after themselves and they tipped well, and it just makes me happy that...
Yes. We have, podcast fans are great fans. Yeah,
they're not filthy, cheap assholes.
No.
You know what I mean? That's really good. I honestly felt like a parent who was like, oh, good, my kids didn't...
Yeah, they didn't embarrass us.
Yeah, they didn't embarrass us. Like... Your fans are awful.
Yeah.
So that has just been so cool. And the emails and stuff from everybody.
A couple of our podcasters embarrassed us. But the fans did not.
We're not mentioning names, Eddie Ift. But, and of course, the live stream, guys, I've been watching some of it, which is...
It looks amazing.
It's really cool. Yeah. It is really cool to see.
And we did the math on it, too. It's like... you get like something like 50 hours of video for like $25. And then, of course, coupon code
nerd,
and then it's only $20.
Yeah.
It's only till October 19th.
It's running out. So watch them.
But we want to thank you guys. It's been great. It was a great festival this year. We love the new location. We love the response, and it's just going to grow.
And, everyone that came to it or has been to it in the past, we're going to,
got a lot of regulars.
A lot of regulars. Let us know, like, what...
First, what your name is, because sometimes we forget from year to year.
Don't be mad that we don't... We meet a lot
Please
of people.
Don't. Please don't be angry if
you
we forget.
You remember me?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I did 150 shows in the last year where I met people, but you're wonderful.
To be fair, we remember your face. Like, we remember meeting you before. We just don't always remember the name.
Yeah. I meet 200 people a week.
Yeah.
I can't remember.
You remember 180 of them, which is pretty impressive.
Yeah, there's just 20 people that are really boring and dumb. And it's not my fault that you have nothing for me to remember.
So name tags.
Yeah, name tags. No, but what I was going to say was, and I think we're going to send out like an official email, but if you post on the PodFest Facebook page or even just email us what shows you'd like to see next year, that'll help us with programming.
Yes, and we want to open up the festival too. We're going to get more NPR podcast. We're going to go after a lot more and really open up the fest.
Yeah, and it's going to, it's so much that there's so many things involved, like the performer schedules. And
there's a lot of moving parts. And to be fair, we tried to get a bunch of NPR podcasts this year. Mm-hmm. It was just a scheduling and budget thing. But next year we're...
So anything you're like, hey, I really want to see this show or whatever, that, we can't guarantee all of it. But if we get a consensus on some shows, we'll definitely try to go.
Yeah. We'll do as many blocks as we can.
All right. Well, let's
introduce our guest.
Let's do it.
Ladies and gentlemen, is a filmmaker, is actually one of the first filmmakers to support Comedy Film Nerds with his work on the short films side of it, and as well as the physical merchandise, because he is the author of the book Puzzle Man, as well as the filmmaker who's done the shorts included on the Three Dead Girls DVD. Ladies and gentlemen, Christopher Alan Broadstone.
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Good to see you. It's been a while since you've
been
on the show. You were one of the first ones, I think.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Or was the first year of...
Well, Chris had one of the first... He had some of the first products in the store.
Well, that I remember. Yeah. I mean, in terms of being a guest, I know it was...
It was the first year, yeah.
It was a while ago.
Really? Because I thought you guys actually seemed really professional even at that time. And I thought, and I was like, wow. what can I say? Yeah, no, well, that's cool to know, because I was kind of scared about being on a podcast because I hadn't been on a podcast myself at that point.
Really? So, that was your first ever podcast appearance?
Yes, it was. Yes, it was. I did. I think I might have done, either before or after that, a call-in thing, which was one of these disaster type shows where, you know, it's like a blog talk radio thing where you end up, are you there? Can you hear me? You know, it's really what most of it of the conversation is. Yeah, yeah, it's completely
connected.
Yep. Skype calls are actually functioning. These blog talk radio things, I don't know. I mean, I even tried to tune into a few, and I'm sitting there waiting and waiting, and then you kind of hear, can anyone hear me? And that's what I'm getting for about 10 minutes. And then you waited about another 5 minutes, and suddenly the guy's posting, we're really sorry for technical difficulties. We have to cancel this podcast. We will reschedule the guests. I totally apologize to the guests. And then you look at and you see their posts on Facebook suddenly. And they're like screaming the F word and typing and, you know, and like, I'm so sorry. I feel like the biggest idiot ever.
How disappointing is it when you hear, we have to cancel the podcast?
Yeah. That is something. Fortunately, you know, and I told the guy, I'm actually a friend with this guy, and I said, look at the bright side. At least it wasn't me that was the guest on the show. He was like, oh, you asshole.
Well, that's cool. And so now, since that time, have you been guesting on a lot of podcasts since it's sort of...
No, I haven't.
You learned your lesson.
I learned my lesson. No, actually, things have kind of veered away for a while after that from...
After being on here,
which really might have done something to my career, sent it on a downward turn. But
that's what we're good at.
I mean, maybe it was because I promoted it so much that too many people actually tuned in, and then after that, downhill right away. No more podcast calls.
For those of you that don't know, Christopher Alan Broadstone is a horror filmmaker with a very unique and specific voice in his work, and it really stands out. And when we saw his short films at Shriekfest, we're like, oh my god, this guy's amazing. And then we started carrying his stuff in the store, and Chris is one of those filmmakers that we've always wanted to help promote and support, and in our very small way, apparently.
No, this is fantastic.
But this is, we wanted to have you in here too. Obviously, it's Halloween, and we're going to be doing a lot of horror movies and themed episodes. Maybe we'll get Matt Moak back in here too.
Ooh.
For the Zombie Research Society.
I love it.
Still use his backpack.
Yeah, it's a great backpack.
Great backpack.
It'll help in the zombie apocalypse.
I strap my yoga mat to it, and I was in yoga class when I first started going, and this woman behind me, I had the backpack. She goes, so how's the zombie research going? And at first I forgot. I was like, what are you talking about? And I was like, oh.
That's right. I'm wearing the backpack.
I was like, yeah, it's going quite well. We're finding a lot of good zombie stuff.
So what we wanted to do is talk about Chris and his book. And he's got a couple of other things coming up, as well as, now you've got a feature in development and a new short, right?
I can say that I've had two features in development or trying to get investors still for quite a while. I'm still working pursuing that. Actively things happening, though. I've been falling more into my writing. I've also been doing a lot of work, as you know, hiring myself out to other filmmakers to do their post editing, audio,
make everything scary.
Make everything happen, you know.
So you
for
just
them
add, ooh.
Yeah, that's exactly what I do. I have these little canned buttons I push, and that's pretty much what I do.
Like, but morning radio.
Yeah, but I don't tell them that, and then I send them a bill. Yeah. And they're really impressed. Both with the bill and
the shrieking.
And the shrieking.
So
that's cool, though. So now, when you do work and post on these films, are you exclusively working in horror or just...
No.
Just
I've done... right now, I've done a... real, like a... God, I don't know what you want to call it. Really a female angst comedy romantic something or other. It's hard to define it, but I did all the editing, all the post, everything, effects, you name it, mixing, everything all the way down the line to full output for, for DVD and for web and all that good stuff. And then after that, I did something that's kind of more of a supernatural little thriller. These were both shorts, however. I have recently been brought in to do some editing on music videos, a couple music videos. One is for Jessica Von Rabbit, used to be with the band Graham Rabbit, mm-hmm. if anybody's familiar with them, and which is very different from the other band, which our group, which is actually an Italian singer who's trying to launch his career and about, to, I think, to get a deal with Sony BMG. And it's, the song's called Frizzy, if you ever hear it, but it's very, you know, kind of, it's very fun, rhythm, bluesy horns, you know, and he's got a lot of guest people on there, because apparently he's a big guy with a festival over there for music, and he's brought in, like, on this video, particularly Jazzy Faw, if you've ever heard of him, he's a big pal of CeeLo Green's, and, you know, and all these other rapper types. So I was working on that, and then for the same director, Giuseppe Asaro, I've been... I was brought in to do a lot of kind of post-editing work to help him with the story and just really get polished and do a lot of polishing editing for a movie called Thrill Kill. And then that went very well, and he needed audio work done, and so he ended up hiring me to do all the post-audio work. So I'm still in the process of finishing that out, and I'll be doing the final mix with him as well and output again. So, and that'll be really, you know, that's a feature, and hopefully that'll be showing up in festivals next year.
Awesome.
Very cool. Well, let's talk about some movies, then we'll get back into what we're talking about. And we've got a new sponsor today, too.
Shazam.
And I'm
with
really...
a contest.
With a, oh, my gosh. This is the best giveaway a sponsor's ever done. Yeah. So we'll get to that in a minute. Yeah. So let's talk about Gone Girl. Now, this is getting a huge amount of buzz, this movie. Okay. And you saw it, and I'm like really excited to see it.
It is, you know... I very much like it. I like David Fincher. You know, I like his films, obviously. You know, this renaissance that Ben Affleck is having, I absolutely...
You're on board. We're all on board.
I'm so on board. So, and I want to bring up David Fincher's IMDb page.
Yeah, I'm a huge Fincher fan.
Yeah, it kind of plays like another one of his movies that I really enjoy, which is Zodiac.
Oh, okay.
In terms of tempo and pacing, and all that. I mean, like The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, The Social Network. You know, he directed a couple episodes of House of Cards. You know, like Fight Club, which was just on the air that I was just watching on cable. So it's really cool. There's some things in there, and I don't want to spoil anything, towards the end that I'll just say I questioned a little bit in terms of like, would the police department really?
Right.
But maybe that's me as a guy that's watched far too many cop shows.
It's just police procedurals. Yeah.
I think I know how cops operate. I don't know what the fuck I'm talking about, but I'm a cop show fan. So maybe I'm just nitpicking. So I just want to preface what I'm saying with that. Overall, this is a fantastic film. Rosamund Pike, holy shit, she is so good in this. Now, she's gripping.
Well, I think, too, Fincher gets a lot of credit for that, for the pacing. It sounds like it was really good.
I mean, it was 2.5 hours or something like that. It's a lengthy film. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's one of those things where just was starting to feel like, oh, this is getting slow. Something interesting happens. Mm-hmm. And you know, it also is a little bit of an indictment on the media and how they could take a little thing, you know, like this.
They just put their spin on it.
They put their spin
on it. You know, it's so obvious. That was very obvious. And that was actually the funny part, I thought, one of the funny parts. Of course, I always laugh when violence happens to people, but...
horror filmmaker.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You guys see it a little differently.
The media can take one little thing and spin it however, whatever direction they want, and how many of the viewers jump on that train.
Jump on board. They are on. And how it actually can affect people. And that was...
Yeah, and how they can flip that entire... A dichotomy in one airing of another viewpoint, and it's just ridiculous, but it's really true.
And it is true, and they, you know,
the basic premise is his wife disappears and he's a suspect.
Yeah,
right.
His wife disappears,
which seems to be a common theme in life these days.
And they do, you know, good casting. Missy Pyle, who you've probably seen her in a million things.
Oh yeah, she's like been in Adam Sandler movies.
Yeah, she's done a lot of different things. She plays this sort of...
she was in Galaxy Quest.
Yeah, she plays this I'm forgetting her name. The woman on CNN that does the court stuff. She's always like
Nancy Grace.
Yes.
Oh God.
And she does a great version of Nancy
so,
Grace.
So she makes a living off of victimized children.
Yeah, basically, okay. And that's what she's doing. And you know, there's this, you know, some like basically tragedy groupie takes a selfie with Ben Affleck. Like he's this guy that's just sort of emotionally right. shut off. So then he's depicted as this like he doesn't care. You know what I mean? And like a woman just takes a selfie with him and he just instinctively just kind of smiles. So they put the, then she puts that picture of him. It's like, he's taking selfies with women while his wife, you know, and just how they do that. And then, you know, he does some dumb things that doesn't help him, but it's crazy. Now I didn't read the book either.
Right.
So
no, I haven't either.
My understanding is that Fincher did make some changes from the book. I'd be curious to know what those are. And I'd be curious to know from any of the fans out there on the message boards or on the Facebook fan page, what you as someone who read the book thought of the film in terms of the changes that were made, if you liked them or if you thought that was...
And like, were they significant or not?
Were they significant or not? And so it's a good film. It's worth seeing. And I'd be curious to know if anybody had some of my reactions to certain things towards the end and how that...
Yeah, what would that be?
What would that be? You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to ruin anything. So I'm just sort
yeah,
of
I know. I, that's
this.
What I was. I was talking to my parents after I'd seen it, and I said, "This is a story that I really can't tell you anything about because if I do,
right.
I'll ruin it."
Yeah,
it is a kind of a classic, a little bit neo now, but of the wrong man theme. You know, it's very Hitchcock in that way, mm-hmm. and like you say, he does little stupid things. That really are not what he intends, like the smile on the selfie and these other little points that he does and just screws himself.
Yeah.
You know, and everybody that wants to spin it a particular way latches onto that, promotes it, and before he can get another word out of his mouth, and he's ruined.
Yeah, and I think there was really good performances, too, like the woman who played his sister.
So it's really also part of the movie is kind of an indictment of the media, too.
It is, it is.
For sure. And, you know, what's her name? Carrie Coon plays his sister. And I thought she did a great job.
She was good.
Of playing the sister of like, you know, you're my brother and I love you and I got your back, but what the fuck, you know, like.
Yeah. But she, at the same time, she was incredibly judgmental. Yeah. And like, I see my brother in a certain way mm-hmm. and you're not filling that perspective anymore. And I'm going to, you know, cut you off at the knees.
Right.
At the same time, I'm hugging you.
Right, right. And then, you know, you had Neil Patrick Harris had a good, and Tyler Perry comes in, and just like you had, Kim Dickens, who plays the detective, was really, I really liked it. Like everybody, it was one of these things, if it wasn't in Fincher's hands, you could have cast it in all of these like two-dimensional cliched ways and directed it in those way of the angry parents and the mm-hmm. cop. And like, mm-hmm. you could have just done this by the numbers and it would have been like, ugh.
Right.
But his like skill at casting correctly, his direction, you can tell to where all of these things, it didn't feel cliched. It didn't feel like any of those things. It just felt like, oh wow. And it felt, very, I mean, it's hard to say. I've never been in this situation. It felt authentic to me, except for that stuff at the end, but that just might be me.
Yeah, I think Fincher's fallen into very, very methodical, high precision way of filmmaking. Where, I mean, he's, if you read anything about him, he's always talked about being almost Kubrick in the sense of doing endless takes to get things absolutely perfect. Every little detail has to be right, and you don't change it either. I saw Neil Patrick Harris on The Late Show, I think, the other night, and he was talking about that. He said that he was thinking, oh, you know, as an actor, I like to play with the part a little bit, and he was doing like a double take or something. And Fincher stopped and said, brought him over and said, double take, no, it's not in there. We don't. No. So he was kind of making a joke out of it. It's like, you know, don't deviate from what I tell you to do. Because yeah. We'll do it another 50 takes if you do that. But you can tell that he's really pushing for very specific performances from his actors and is willing to keep going till he gets it. I think Hitchcock was very much that way. And I kind of consider Fincher the new Hitchcock. Mm-hmm. In some ways, though, I think he's doing it better than Hitchcock did, because sometimes Hitchcock felt a little too on the nosy.
Then that's you, a bold you statement, are, you know, Christopher Allen.
Yeah, I know. He liked to play the audience like a piano, I think is what he said. And and you could almost feel that sometimes with Fincher. He pushes it, but he's not being quite as obvious about it.
Well, I also think too. I wonder.
Well, you wonder too. It's like, would David Fincher be David Fincher without the influence of Alfred Hitchcock?
I don't think he would.
Well, also too, Hitchcock was operating under stricter guidelines for content, and you had to have the good guy and the bad guy,
right?
You know, and you had those things that he was operating under. So I wonder, because you got to understand too, if you put it in the context, you know, yeah, he said he would play the audience like a piano, but he was pushing the boundaries for that time.
Yes, of course.
And so,
well, and the audience had a different perspective back then too. They were more naive about things, and you could play them a little more like a piano. I mean, as time progresses, films progress, it gets harder and harder and harder to bring the audience in to that moment in the movie and make them suspend their disbelief and go, okay, I'm buying into it.
Yeah, and he was also, he's pre-America questioning everything. He's pre-Vietnam, he's pre-Watergate, he's pre- all the assassinations that went on in the 60s, you know, the Kennedys, Dr. King, like he's pre all of that. So like you said, he did have a more naive audience. So, you know, now I think, again, I'm cynical because not only have I watched a lot of cop shows, I've watched a lot of documentaries about police departments and all the, and I love those like investigative things about actual crimes that are committed. And I've seen countless interviews with actual detectives talking about this. So that's why because in the 50s, I wouldn't have had access to this stuff at all.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, and so that's why I'm more critical of his handling of a police department, even though, you know, I'm still just a fan, but it is, I do love what you say about how Fincher is so methodical.
Right. And I strive to be that way too. And in everything I do, whether it's my writing or I'm doing film or I'm editing someone else's work, but to try to really get everything to where, you know, it's just one frame or one word away. If you went left, that would have ruined the performance or the reading or whatever, but you cut it right, you know, and you can just tell that he's just doing that. He's getting the absolute right moments. And I know he works with two high-end editors that...
Well, Girl with the Dragon Tattoo is a great example of how precise and meticulous that film, the way it was.
I agree. I mean, I know there's a lot of people that don't like that film, find it just dull as ditch water, but I've watched it on countless times, and I think it's great. There's so much in every scene. The performances are perfect. It's just amazing.
His methodical nature to me is like, I'm so drawn to it. Like I'm so just in, it's so engaging.
And those three books are very difficult to adapt. People don't realize.
And there were great movies already made in another country, in the country where they're from. So it's like, that was so bold.
That the second and third books are one story. I mean, you have like the first book is a story, then the second and third one are like together are one story. And then there's all these tangents and, you know, stories that it just meanders, but you don't mind it because it's so well written. Like Stieg Larsson created this entire world, but it makes it very difficult to film because you have to figure out what to take out because you lose that flavor of the world and what to keep in to keep your pacing for cinema.
Yeah.
And I think, too, like, if you look at any of his stuff, like Benjamin Button or Social Network, again, those movies are very different from each other, and yet his skill at creating the person and creating this full three-dimensional person that isn't like a Hollywood caricature is really amazing. And he's not just
in big Hollywood movies.
In big Hollywood movies, giant actors. Yeah. I mean, huge A-list people. And you're looking at like, and it's not just, obviously it's in the direction when you hear stories like that from Neil Patrick Harris, but how he lights it, how he frames it, how he is presenting this person to you. And he does all these little subtle things that you might not be aware of that just like captures like the like Neil Patrick Harris, for example, like when we get mm-hmm. to kind of see him in his home and his life and who he is, and it's different than our first introduction to him, and it's
right.
so specific what he's doing that, because he's the first time he's like, oh, we're only seeing this limited view of this guy, which is kind of what the whole movie is about.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because they immediately establish Ben Affleck as somebody you don't trust.
Right.
Even with us as the audience, mm-hmm. before they start to, you know, expand on all of that. But in the same way with Neil Patrick Harris, in the same way with, you know, his wife, Rosamund mm-hmm. Pike, they totally sell you on they are this kind of person. And you believe it. He's already playing. He's being the media to the audience. I mean, in this, really, he is. And then we get, as the audience, make it, and you know, we think, oh, we're informed, and I already have an opinion from word go. And now, he's doing it with the media and the movie, and we start to make fun of that. And then we forget the fact that, oh, he already made us make an opinion.
Yeah.
With in like a snap.
Mm-hmm. With a quick shot,
yeah,
or something.
And they were, very quickly.
It's a quick thing, like Ben Affleck just sort of getting a phone call and putting it in his pocket.
Yeah.
You know, and you're just like, right. oh. Like, just the way he did, you're like, and he is, it's so quick, but so deliberate. I like this film, and I think it's a movie for me that I'm going to need to see several more times.
Right.
Get the layers of mm-hmm. it, and to see if my initial reaction to the stuff at the end, if I was overreacting.
Oh,
to it.
Wow. You know what
I mean? Sometimes I've done that with films. Where I remember the first time I saw Castaway, and I was like, And then that's a movie now I'm mesmerized by. I'm mesmerized by it. And because I needed to see it multiple times to understand truly what the filmmaker was doing mm-hmm. And maybe the environment or where I saw it was influencing how I was taking it.
Yeah, well, that's always a case too.
Right.
What I love about Fincher is that when you watch his movies, you can tell that he's really painting a picture.
Yeah.
Very specifically painting a picture. I think Hitchcock would have been the filmmaker that was painting on a canvas with a brush. Now, and Fincher is the modern Hitchcock who's using Photoshop to do his painting, which mm-hmm. is going to be more specific, more exact. But it's also dangerous because you can very easily overdo stuff, mm-hmm. over-affect it. And I get so... over-sanitize it. You can really screw it up because you have so much more control. And the same way when I'm working on things now, I cut screen for me on film. I was very limited in what I could do. I had to work with very specific parameters and within limits. But now, when I'm working, you know, in Avid or in Final Cut Pro or Premiere, it's limitless what I can do. So I'm at risk screwing things up. If I can screw things up, and I've seen other people do it because they can keep changing things. I have clients; they will now, you know, when I did Scream for Me on film, I had to actually do the old-fashioned way, and you lock the edit. Because you have to send this is now going to sound people, and they don't like it when you want to go change something anymore. And that's very true all the way down the line, even though we were doing digital audio. But now, and especially when I'm doing things full post for somebody, a client, they think a week after we're done, they want to come back and change something.
Oh, yeah.
And it just happens again and again and again until the point they're like, I want to talk to you about my movie. And I say, I don't. You know, you're done. Done with it. People won't be done. And so it's very tricky. And I think, you know, Fincher does push that limit. And I know he takes advantage of that stuff and will make changes at the last minute. But he doesn't, again, overdo things. And the point I wanted to get to with all of that is how I get tired of movies where they're using too many effects. They're trying to sell me with effects. They're trying to sell me with all kinds of this, that, and the other thing. And to just get away from get away from all this fancy transitions or fancy camera work even. And he's even gotten away from a lot of fancy camera work. Now, he does great camera work, but it's very specific and very planned. And it's just and very massaged to be just right. And you're not trying to wow me with your technique, even though it's obvious if you know what you're looking at, it's there. You know, I love the fact that it's a story. It's a movie, mm-hmm. you know, an old fashioned movie in that way, mm-hmm. because I still go back and I love to watch black and white films from the 30s, 40s, silent movies, whatever.
It almost his color choice, his color saturation, everything. He wanted you to feel like it was a black and white movie.
Yeah.
You know, it was very gray.
It's probably muted color palette. Now, that's, again, that's something that you didn't used to be able to do in post. Now you can do in post. Like, you can literally change your entire movie's color palette. I mean, it's expensive and takes a long time, but you can do it now. It's amazing. Like, if you're like, this whole movie is too bright.
Yeah.
And I want to mute these colors. You can do it now.
He does that thing, what you're talking about, is... Because we've mentioned it on the show before, just because you have all this technology doesn't mean you have to use it.
Right.
And he only uses it as it fits the story. Too many people just want to use it because they can. Because
they have it. Yeah.
It's like, I got this hot rod. I got to drive all fast everywhere. No, you don't. Drive the speed limit and pick up the fucking groceries. Like, and I think he does that.
And look good doing it.
That brings up the Dave Grohl documentary I just saw not too long ago. Sound City. If you guys have seen Sound City.
Oh, no.
You need to watch that. It's really good. I mean, but they get into that.
Lord Coretta reviewed it on the site, I believe. Yeah. I think he's our music movie reviewer.
Okay. I mean, they put an album out with it. They brought in a lot of artists, everybody from Paul McCartney to, you know.
It's about that recording studio in Van Nuys.
Yeah. And he ended up buying the analog board from there, and he put it in his home studio, and they did all the recording on that, and it brings back my music days of recording on a board just like that. But they got into the whole analog versus digital thing, and I want to say that it was maybe Trent Reznor was one of the guests, somebody like that that's so steeped in electronic, music making and that sort of thing. But they said exactly what we were just talking about, that just because you have all this technology doesn't mean you should always use it.
Right.
It's a tool. It's another tool. But people now have that ability because of it. It's so easy now to do this stuff. And with GarageBand with all these things that, you don't have to ever have been able to play an instrument in your life. And you can sound like you're a genius in a matter of like 5 minutes.
Right.
And so you have all these people out there that should never have been making music. And that's what they were saying flat out in this documentary. And I feel the same way about movies. It's so easy now. Everybody's a filmmaker. And especially with the iPhone and high definition and everything. If you own an iPhone, you're a filmmaker now. So it's really scary. So you have all these people, and with YouTube, of course, and Vimeo, and everybody knows, it's endless stream of crap.
It's the best thing about it is everybody can do it. The worst thing about it is that everybody can do it.
Yeah, exactly.
Speaking of that, going to talking about Shriekfest, I was over the weekend. Mm-hmm. Neil was over there. Neil covers the whole thing, and what I love about this festival too is it's like it's the right size. It's never going to get bigger. It's at the Raleigh screening stages across from
Chaplin Studio.
Yeah. It's got a great program of shorts. It's got a great program of horror, but they also do science fiction and sometimes some fantasy and even sometimes some comedies as well. And I was talking to the director, Denise, and she had said that they had tried to expand it before and make it on multiple screens and get it bigger, and the fans got angry because then that means they were missing some of the programming. So they had to deliberately keep it smaller to keep the fans of the festival happy. So you have the shorts programs usually during the day and then the feature programs at night. And it's the first time we went there and actually with a portable recorder and interviewed filmmakers. And I had Neil do it, and Neil was a little nervous, but he did a great job. The first one I did with him, and it was like, well, what do you think? I'm like, no, you're doing fine. You're doing fine. Neil, go ahead. You can handle this interview. It's fine. We interviewed the filmmakers from Time Lapse, which is actually a movie I saw. Now, this is one of the science fiction offerings that played, I believe, Saturday night. It's got a great premise. It's a low-budget science fiction, self-funded, not Kickstarter, nothing. These guys just put their own money in, or they got friends and family. And basically, it's about three kind of millennials, I guess you could say now, kind of early 30s, late 20s. And they're in an apartment complex, and one of them is like one of the building managers. And he finds out one of the guys dies in the building, and he's like a scientist. And they find in his apartment this giant camera, and it's bolted to the floor, and it's pointed right at their apartment. And this camera takes pictures every day, but the pictures are 24 hours in the future. So it shows what happens the next day in their own apartment.
Wow.
And then when they go in, they see an entire wall is covered with pictures that they've been, this guy has been watching.
Wow.
So then they decide, well, should we report it? Should we use this for our own advantage? And of course, you know, how's the movie going to move forward if they report it?
Right.
Of course not. So then they start to use it to their own advantage, and then things go awry from there. And it's a really cool low-budget science fiction movie, and you guys are going to be hearing a lot more about it. It did get a VOD deal.
Okay.
So you actually, it'll be released in like January, February next year, I think even with a limited theatrical.
Hmm.
So, but it's a fun movie. It's one of those movies that whenever you do a time travel movie, you really got to pay attention on what's going on. There's definitely those moments of like, well, wait, I don't know if that, wait, the rules you set up, does that really, I think, all right, we're just going to have to trust you on this. There's a couple nitpicking things I had with it, like there was the one female character was not nearly as well written as she should have been. Like if a guy who's the boyfriend and his deadbeat friend are sitting on a couch watching TV or playing video games, and the woman comes home from either working or shopping, she is not going to say, hey, what do you guys want for dinner? I'll make your favorite. No, she's going to go, get off your asses. Man, why isn't dinner ready when I come home?
Right, right.
That's like, right. Little things like that. I'm like, you need to write women a little better. But for the most part, it was a really fun movie. And it was, they used their limited budget in a very creative way. It was all one location. It was in this apartment complex.
Oh, nice.
The fabrication of the camera, it looked beautiful. Like you actually wanted to see more shots of the camera and see how the machine worked. It looked like this giant steampunk creation. In this room. And so definitely check it out. It's one of those cool low budget sci-fi movies. It's got a couple problems, so there's a couple quirks with it, but on the whole, it's a fun movie. Good acting, good directing, and decent writing. So check it out when it comes around, probably next year. It's called Time Lapse. But Shriekfest is a great festival. If you're in L.A. During the, you know, so let's say you stay an extra week after the podcast festival.
It's always right.
Go to Shriekfest. Yeah, go to Shriekfest.
Right.
Yeah. So, and this again, it's like where we met Chris, because Denise has such a great eye for shorts and features and horror. You really go, you know, you're gonna see some great stuff.
The thing I've always liked about that festival, I mean, obviously, as I've said, you know, I'm not a huge horror genre guy, but first of all, the horror fan is a very unique
fan.
Right.
And there are really cool things being done in that genre by really talented filmmakers. And that's the thing I always dig every year, is seeing this, like, oh wow, like, that was really interesting what they're doing.
And the shorts, too. The shorts have been amazing. Yeah. You see sometimes higher budgets on the shorts than on the features sometimes.
Right, yeah, you can. Yeah, I mean, I remember my days at Shriekfest, and it was great. I originally had my film My Skin in the festival.
Yeah,
way back when. I hate to bring up years anymore. But I was also conned by a friend who ran a website at the time, a review website in England called Rumor Machine, which no longer exists, to cover the entire festival.
Mm-hmm.
So I was very unhappy about being conned into doing that, and my film was in there, and I knew I wasn't going to win anything, and I was very jaded and blah, blah, blah. But anyway, I went, and I ended up really enjoying the festival, even though I had to write all this stuff about movies that I really didn't, a lot of which at the time I did not want to watch. And but it was really cool when we were at the award ceremony, and I was with my pad and pen and writing, and they were announcing everybody, and I was trying to scribble it out, and you know, in one of the best short film awards, scribbling out My Skin by Christopher Alan Broadstone. And I was like, wait a minute, that's me, you know.
Make sure you get the spelling right.
Yeah. So it ended up being a great experience because of that. And then I went back, I was back the following year with another film. Mm-hmm. And was, you know, had my book out like by then, Puzzle Man, and promoting all of that. So yeah, and it was always, and one of my comments though in my final review, endless review blog for the festival was exactly what you were saying, that it was small and it was in Hollywood but un-Hollywood.
Yes.
And I hoped that it would always stay that way.
Yeah.
So it's good to hear, because I haven't been back in a while, and it's good to hear that it's still saying that. Yeah.
That's right. It doesn't feel Hollywood. Like, you almost feel like you almost feel like you went somewhere else.
Right.
Yeah. You know what I mean?
Like, what's this festival doing in L.A.?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. It has a very it has a very independent feel to it, but but that's not a bad thing. No, it's actually a good thing in this case. Yep. And I've always, you know, I always liked Chaplin, you know,
it's
theater. It's a nice theater.
I forgot how comfortable
and,
the seats were. Oh, my God.
Yeah, and it's so fun. You get to walk around a little bit on a studio. It's, you
it's
know,
old
it's not
Hollywood
a major,
history, too.
Yeah,
old
that
history,
too.
Which I like.
Yeah, you can drive right on the lot.
Yeah.
It's really cool.
Yeah, so it's a lot of fun.
Right on.
So, all right. Well, I think we're going to get right into this ad read because we're
running
out of time. Now, I was really excited about this this company because we did this ad read at the live show at PodFest. But this, we want to let you guys know, this is Creative Live. And I like when a sponsor comes on board big. Like not only are they offering free stuff for you guys, what they do is they're offering these podcast seminars that you can actually watch online for free. But also, they have a contest. They're going to send you to San Francisco and pay for it.
Yeah.
One winner is actually going to actually go to San Fran and watch these live. And it's not just like, well, we'll give you like a couple $100. No, you get like $500 for airfare. You get a hotel for 3 nights. And here's what they are. It's Alex Blumberg's Power Your Podcast with Storytelling and John Lee Dumas's Podcasting 101 courses. Now, Power Your Podcast, Alex Blumberg is from, I think, This American Life. Mm-hmm. Is an NPR, and John Lee Dumas is one of the entrepreneurial, like, entrepreneur on fire kind of things. And his website is great. I went to his website, and he shows... I like it because it's not like gimmicky. It's like, hey, get rich quick, you know, that kind of 500... Right. You know, just buy my course and you'll be a millionaire. They actually show you, they list out their books. They show what their expenses are every month and what they make every month. Like August, they made like something like $250,000 and they showed their expenses. And they showed, well, now we were down 16,000 from this previous month because it's for basically how to run your business. And they have some great interviews.
Yeah, Alex Blumberg does This American Life and Planet Money.
Right. So here's the deal. All you guys have to do is go to... our Facebook or Twitter accounts. It's Facebook. It's facebook.com/comedyfilmnerds. And then also it's @comedyfilmnerds at Twitter. And the link will be there to enter the contest. And there's also a hashtag, CL Podcast.
We know how you guys like
hashtags.
Yeah,
we know you guys like hashtags. Come on, check it out.
Hashtag hard work it.
And we want you to, and one grand prize winner will win a trip to San Francisco to attend the upcoming podcasting courses, which is really cool. You get a seat in the studio. The contest starts on the 6th, which is yesterday, and it'll go to the 10th. So there's not a lot of time. It's only a couple of days.
Yeah.
So, I think there's only like 500 people signed up for the contest.
Man, go to
you
San Francisco.
You got to do it now, today.
Trip.
And you guys, it'll be really, really cool. And what I love about it too is I like when a sponsor comes on board and gives you stuff. That makes us happy because there's a lot of podcasters that listen to this. These courses are going to be great, and they won't cost you anything. And that's the important thing. CreativeLive.com for more info. And check out Facebook. Our Facebook and Twitter accounts will give you the link. But if you really want the URL, if you're a weirdo that likes to type it in, it is cr8.lv/podcastpower.
Yeah, just go to the Facebook.
Yeah, just go to the Facebook.
Right. Just click, everybody wins. Pretty
Somebody
simple.
Just paused and like rewind, like, no, fuck this. I'm going to write
it down. I want CLA to whatever that one is.
I'm going to write it down. So check it out. And we're happy to have Creative Live as a sponsor. And check out those free courses. That will be awesome.
San Fran, whoever wins, you got to send photos from San Francisco to us.
Yeah, definitely. You got to do a work it picture.
You got to do a hard SF work it hashtag.
Yeah, I'd love to get back to San Francisco.
That's a great town.
It is cool. And I'm noticing here you have this lovely LA podcast program.
Yeah.
And I'm seeing that Vertigo, which is one of my all-time favorite Hitchcock films, and shot in San Francisco for the location.
Yep. That's a great film, which is, anyway,
I just had to bring that up. I don't know why.
Yeah,
it's really
nice film nerd eye.
It's really not important, and it has nothing to do with anything. But
so Chris, now tell us about what you have coming up. I know you're working on you're re-releasing Puzzle Man. Although we're going to give away a copy today.
What?
Yes,
it's giveaway. It's crazy giveaway.
I know
day.
You guys are getting so much free stuff today.
Is this the e-copy we're talking about, or something else? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Good. Just so people know,
it's an e-copy.
It's going to be an e-copy, and saying that, I know people have different readers out there. I know Kindle's extremely popular, but there are others in the market. Like
there's an anti-Kindle
Nook
backlash.
And blah 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 blah. Well, you have a choice if you win this copy. You can have a Mobi file, which will work great on many things, but specifically for sure Kindle. You can get an EPUB file, which will work on Nook, I believe, and lots of other things I don't know about. Or if you just like it on your computer, you can have a really nice PDF file that's formatted more so like exactly like the printed book is. So anyway, those are the three choices, whoever might end up winning this wonderful copy.
So one way or another, you'll be able to read it.
Right. That's the point.
Yeah, one way. First, we want you to be able to read the thing that you win. That's the bonus we're giving you guys.
And I don't know if I should bring this up here about the book, but yeah, it's been re-released as of October 1st this year. It's a little bit cheaper than it was. It used to be $5.99 on Kindle. It's now $4.99 on Kindle. Also, to give people a chance to maybe get into it and sample it, I've now serialized it in six parts, which are the six parts of the book. At 99 cents a piece.
Oh, nice.
So essentially, you can't really lose right now. I mean, you can give it a chance at 99 cents. If you hate it, you only lost 99 cents. And I thank you for the 35 cents royalty I will get from that.
We also have signed hard copies here on the site.
Yes, and they will have that as well.
Chris makes more money from those.
Yes, and they cost a lot more too.
All right, so here's how we're going to do the contest. So go to the Comedy Film Nerd Facebook page. We're going to put a post up to tell us your favorite 20s or 30s era horror movie.
And you must defend your choice.
You must defend it. And then Christopher Alan Broadstone will pick the one that he thinks makes the best case.
So good.
We're going to put that up. Go to the Facebook page. You will see it for tell us your favorite 20s or 1920s or 1930s era horror movie and why. And then if you defend your thesis, you defend your choice.
Free Puzzle Man.
Right. And of course, we need to know what file you like for whatever, however you want to read it, whether it's Kindle, Nook, or
when Chris contacts you.
Well, we can get into all that then. Yeah. So.
You can give him your tech requirements.
There we go. Yes.
I'm using a Commodore 64, and I would like
right
this.
On. And I also
without a screen. How can I read it?
Nice. And I also have a new short story coming out, new anthology that's coming out on Halloween. I want to talk about too. Is this a good time to talk about?
Absolutely.
That?
Yeah.
Okay. It's called Journals of Horror: Found Fiction. It's going to be edited by Terry M. West. I don't know if you guys are familiar with Terry. He's had quite a name for a long time. He directed a lot of various movies. He did a lot of movies that he doesn't want to be associated with.
Right.
And I'm not sure if he did that, but he did. He's most known for Flesh for the Beast, which is definitely still available on Amazon. It's out in Blu-ray now and everything. But Terry's also been a writer for a long time, and he's really kind of thrown movies making aside in favor of writing. And he has a lot of good stuff out there. If you get on Facebook, find him. Just look up Terry M. West, or find me, Christopher Alan Broadstone, and you'll find plenty of links probably to get you to Terry and find his stuff. He just released something called Heroin in the Magic Now, which is a kind of a really personal horror fiction. But anyway, go out there and check up on that
Terry
too.
West. I think T.I. West is
maybe so. So anyway, he's decided to put together an anthology to help a lot of writers, and it's called Journals of Horror: Found Fiction, and it's taking the idea of the found footage genre in cinema and applying it to writing. So each of the stories has to be thematically based.
Found manuscripts?
Yeah, found manuscripts, or it could be anything. You know, he was really pushing people, you know, maybe you found out your information in a fortune cookie, you know, or it could be any number of things. I think I pushed the limits quite a bit and broke the rule and stretched it a lot. I'm curious to see what the other writers will do. My story is called Note to Self, but it will be available on Amazon. It's up for pre-order right now.
Shazam.
And it'll be out in ebook on Halloween, and then it will be coming out in a hard form probably about 2 weeks, a month later.
What horror movies coming out are you excited about?
I don't know. I'm often not very excited about the horror movies that keep coming out. I know that Annabelle was just out, and I know it did pretty well for opening weekend, typical. Of course, it's October. But I didn't see it, but all the reviews I was looking at said the same thing. It was the same old stuff.
It seems to me like every horror we've talked about this on the show before. The horror movie, they all have the same trailer.
Yeah,
it's just beat for beat. And
it's the faces that pop out. I mean, it's literally they could can that now and just put it in a software, and it will just take your footage and make that.
Yeah. It's unbelievable. Yeah. That's what I feel like.
You also, then you have the title of the movie, and then you have the stinger at the end.
Yeah.
Where there's like that one big scream at the end.
Yeah. Yeah. I think Ouija is the other movie that's coming out this month. Mm-hmm. And it looks like a load of stuff I never want to see. Mm-hmm. You know, it's another teenager driven playing with the Ouija board. The spirits get woken up. What? How many times has that been done?
I know.
Forever.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, but people keep going to see it, and they're going to keep making them as long as the kids keep going.
What do you want to see? Like, what do you, what would you like to see?
My movie. That's what I would like to see. But, you know, I don't say that to be arrogant or anything, or make, really even to make a joke, but it's kind of true. I what saddens me is that, you know, even though I default into horror, I feel like I also don't really fit in horror either. Mm-hmm. I'm a terrible horror fan in the sense that I don't go see everything.
Right.
I'm not, I mean, if it's a ghost story, I'm like, I already saw that before.
Right.
You know, I don't want to see it again. You know, it's the possession movies. I want to like the possession movies, but after you've seen The Exorcist and The Omen and about two or three others, you've seen them all.
Right.
And I'm sick of that crap. So I really want people to, you know, or like I try to do, push the limits of that, and don't worry about making it a what I call a spook movie, because that's what usually is what the horror that comes out is, and that's why I don't care about seeing them, because they're simply, we're going to make you jump,
right?
And that's it. And the story is secondary. I like, that's why I like Fincher so much, and you know, movies like Seven were a big influence on me, and just following that, you know, that thinking where I'm not trying to make a horror story for you. I'm but make a really dark, macabre story. You know, that's why I love it. Edgar Allan Poe and things like that. If you read Edgar Allan Poe, he's not scary.
No one's jumping
really
out.
Yeah, right. Nobody's jumping out at you. But it's psychological.
Just the gorilla
morgue. It just makes you, it just draws you in, gets you into a story, and it's, I just like the macabre vibe. Mm-hmm. And that's the kind of movies I really like. You know, I mean, that's why I kind of liked Walk Among the Tombstones. It had a very, very noir, macabre vibe.
What did you think about that film overall?
I liked it overall. I really did.
We weren't sure from the trailers too, but it wasn't like a Taken movie.
It was not like a Taken movie.
I knew they did a Taken trailer. I knew it. Yeah.
Yeah. And I saw two trailers. I saw the one they had on TV, which is like probably the 20-second spot, the 10-second spot, maybe 30 if you're lucky. Very intense. It drew me in immediately, and you know, because you're seeing creepy guys with a meat cleaver with the, you know, all this stuff, and I'm going, this looks intense, very intense. And then I saw the like minute and a half, 2 minute trailer on the website, I guess, and it was much more slowly paced, much more like a Fincher type of film these days. And then when I saw it, it was more like that. It was very noir, and it had a slow burn to it, and. It was good. It was solid.
The trailers
it was solid.
Made me just go, oh, this is this the yearly Taken.
It's not.
I saw the noir trailer, and then I'm like, oh, I know they did that Taken trailer.
And you'll like it because the characters, again, are very, it's kind of like a David Fincher film that isn't David Fincher. So it has a little bit different take on it, but the performances are great. The characters are different, even though familiar types of characters, but they're different within the context of their character. And I think you'll like that. I think that's why you liked Gone Girl, and I think you'll like this movie for the same reason. But what's crazy too is that the movie is shot in color, it's presented in color, but I swear to God, I remember the movie in black and white. Because it was this color saturation, the way they shot it,
been
and
black
everything.
Black and white, except for some red blood or whatever.
Yeah, like. And that's exactly the way I remember that movie. I swear, if you said, was it shot in black and white or color? I'd say, I remember it in black and white, but I know it was shot in color.
Right. I love it.
So
very cool.
All right, man. Well, that's good. You just converted me. I'm
in. Now I want to see it again,
too. I think the first Taken movie was pretty good.
I love the first Taken movie.
I didn't bother to go see the rest because everybody said, oh, God. And now they're making a third.
Of course they are.
Yeah,
which
they're
going to
keep going.
I'll see you.
Once you're in, you're in.
Yeah.
Now let's go to DVDs. Edge of Tomorrow. This is a movie that I really just... because of scheduling, I was not able to go see it. I really want to see this movie on
DVD. Oh, me too. And I haven't seen it either yet.
I saw it, and I liked it. It was a lot of fun, and it's got some cool, interesting stuff into it, and the action.
Is it two Transformers video game?
No.
That's what I was worried about, and it kind of steered me away a little bit.
It was the kind of thing where, all those trailers, I was scared, and I was like, oh, but Tom Cruise is great, and Emily Blunt, who up till this point has always played the like fun-loving British girl. She plays a badass, and she's great in it.
Cool.
Well, also, there was some controversy about leaving the original title in. They think the movie would have done better. All You Need Is Kill was like the original
title. That's a great title. It's Doug Liman is the director, who I like. You know, I like Mr. and Mrs. Smith. And it has that playfulness that Mr. and Mrs. Smith had, and good action and stuff. It's worth seeing. It's perfect for guys like you that just didn't miss it or didn't think it was that great. I think it's a good DVD choice. Cool.
And Tom Cruise, who I would never say that I would have gone to see a movie because of Tom Cruise. He's really kind of, I don't know, like he disappeared for a while, it seemed like, in a way. It was this crazy Scientologist, and that's the way everybody was thinking of him only. And then he started coming back with all these, cranking out all these movies, and I'm really starting to kind of be impressed with the guy now. Yeah. It's like he kind of finally learned to get out of that one perspective, Tom Cruise, intense everything, and he's like an actor now, a real actor.
It's really, you know, sometimes he does his movies where you're like, oh, this is just a Tom Cruise-ian thing, but this is interesting.
Yeah.
Like,
Oblivion.
Oblivion, where you're like, okay.
Well, I didn't hate that movie that much.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow, I did.
Really? Yeah, you should have seen After Earth, which wasn't with Tom Cruise, but...
No, but that won Razzies. That one's even in a whole other department. Really? The thing I loved about Oblivion, though, I will say there's one thing I loved about it. I thought the production design was absolutely phenomenal.
Yes, I thought it was
like everything from the way the ships and the structures, everything was created. There was a meticulous detail to it. Just there was not a meticulous detail to the script. So
I saw it in the theater, and I don't know. Maybe I was just in a good mood that day, but I don't remember disliking it. I need to watch it again and see what
and
I think.
And then not like it.
Yeah, and then not like it.
Now the next movie, A Million Ways to Die in the West. This one is Seth MacFarlane's movie that really
was
tanked.
It good? Was it good?
I did not see it.
I didn't see it.
Although I have to say, I'm sure it was just like all of Seth MacFarlane's work, where it's a mixture of inspired and lazy. like Ted is a great example of that. And like, oh, this is kind of a funny concept. There's some funny scenes. And then, oh, that's a really boring way to go with humor and a really lazy way to go with jokes and humor.
That's what I find is a lot of stuff, comedies and things. It's great idea, but just poorly executed.
And it's also, I found the same thing with Family Guy. I feel like, you know, some of it's inspired and it's like, is incredibly lazy. I mean, you just... You know, you're going to that well again that you know, least common denominator and hackneyed old stereotypical jokes. I'm like, no, you've shown you can do more. Stop leaning on that crutch that you keep leaning on.
Right.
You know, have your movie or your show be innovative and creative all the way through. I probably won't see this movie.
Some point, and I'm sure I'll laugh and then have the same reaction. Oh, that scene was funny. Oh, that was dumb.
And Million Dollar Arm is the other movie.
That's the John Hamm, gets the kids from India to play baseball. Uh-huh. It's very Disney.
Oh, okay.
But in the end, a good, it has its...
Did you see it?
I did see it when it came out. I liked it. Mm. It was nice seeing John Hamm not be Don Draper, and...
It seemed like it was one of those by-the-numbers movies where you're not going to... unbelievably love it, but there's nothing to hate in it either.
No, there's nothing like, what the fuck are they doing?
Yeah,
it's just this Disney by the numbers based on a
feel
true
good
story.
Kind of feel movie. Good. Yeah.
And all those moments. I was
Slumdog Millionaires. Not,
right.
Yes. I don't, I mean, I'm not a big fan of that movie, even though people think it's genius work. Genius
That's
work.
So
I'm not, but I'm just like, yeah.
I was like in the minority on the Slumdog Millionaire. I think because I saw it too after all the hype and how great it was.
Yeah, I probably did too.
I think you run the risk of that when you see a movie that everyone's talking about how great it is.
Right. Right. Or you just have no soul. You're
That or that.
Yeah.
Which is very likely with me.
So, okay, premiering this week, The Judge. Now, I think I'm in the minority on I'm still excited about to see this movie.
What is that? Who's in that?
It's with Robert Duvall and...
Robert Downey Jr.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay.
I've seen there's three different trailers out there for three different movies.
Oh, wow. I haven't seen that many.
I saw the one that's like, there's a big case he's coming back to his hometown for, and... him and his dad don't get along. Is his dad guilty? Bum, 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 bum. Then I saw one that's like a romance. Then I just saw one where the one on TV that was playing this weekend, because I was watching some football games, and this is the one they were showing during football games.
Right.
They're in the court, and he's like, Robert Duvall's giving, we're doing jury selection, and Robert Duvall's trying to tell his son, you got to get the guy, you know, get a jury that's, I don't know what the, but it's like, get someone that's they're not bright or whatever. And then Robert Downey Jr. asked, what do you guys, what kind of bumper stickers do you have on your car? And one guy's like, I got a bumper sticker that says, missing dog and wife. Take reward for the dog. One of those dumb, but I don't care. My wife's dead. You know what I mean? Like, it's one of those stupid things, and everybody laughs. And then the, go see the judge this weekend. And I'm like, so it's a fucking goofball
comedy. Like,
it's a court goofball movie.
So now it's My Cousin Vinny.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's what I thought. And I put that on Twitter. It's like, is this a gritty like dad like a gone girl?
Yeah,
I think I might have seen in a completely different trailer than anyone you described. I think
Robert Downey Jr. defending his father.
He's defending his father.
He's up for some corruption or something.
His dad is a big, powerful judge. He comes back to his small town. Him and his dad don't get along.
Right, I got that.
The trailer I saw was a drama about a family reconciling, and the courtroom stuff was just on the periphery of it.
Yeah, okay, I've seen that version.
Yes.
Courtroom hijinks? Yeah. No.
Yeah, I like Robert Downey Jr. a lot, so I would buy. Sure. I'd probably just see it. I don't know that I'd go out to the theater to see it, but I'll Netflix it, probably.
I don't know what to do with this, because I like Robert Downey Jr. I love Robert Duvall. But I don't know what the fuck. If this is just like slapstick in the courtroom, or do they just like, oh, football fans are stupid, they'll like this.
What I think. I think it was a more of a marketing ploy. Like, oh, the football fans will like this joke.
These beer guzzling.
Yeah, then they'll go see the movie. Yeah, I'm sure it's cynical. I'm sure it's cynical marketing that will backfire, as it always does.
Right.
Now, the next one is a kids' movie, Alexander and the Terrible, Horrible, No Good, Very Bad Day, based on the book. This looks like a real classic, again, Disney, but kids' movie.
Sure.
Not like a family, not like the whole family can enjoy it. This is the one that the kids drag the parents to go see and love it.
Right.
And the parents are like, all right, or checking their watch through through the movie.
This even is with an animated thing? Or
no, it's a live action.
With
Steve Carell in it. I think this will be
any of that.
I think kids are going to love this movie. I think parents are just going to be like, how long is this?
Yeah.
How long is it
I'm
over?
Curious to see what you and Bella think of this
movie. Yeah, so I think I might be going to see this weekend.
Of course.
Next movie I will not be going to see is Dracula Untold.
Right.
We will send Neil to this movie. Even after Shriekfest, he will get to see another horror movie, sort of.
You're doing the Lord's work, Neil.
Yeah, and this is I talked about it at the podcast.
Yeah, we showed the trailer at the festival. Yeah.
And how this is everything wrong with American cinema. It's flawed premise, and then you throw $200 million at it.
Yeah, it's this whole cheesy, over-romanticized, melodramatic vampire crap has got to go.
Yes.
It has to end, and this is the perfect
example. Watch The Strain. That's how vampires are.
This is a great example of what we were talking about earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And they went, you know, we could have his cape turn into a bunch of bats with the technology.
Yeah,
I know.
Yeah.
Don't have it turn into a good script.
Yeah. No.
Yeah. We made fun of this because it was such a dumb trailer. It was fun to show the trailer at PodFest and have people watch it because it was just... And they do that thing of like, oh, God, he bites the woman's neck and it's like, oh, it's sexual. And everyone that does a Dracula thing thinks they're the first person to come up with that. Like, actually, he's not murdering her. It's kind of sexual. Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah, right.
They haven't been doing with that with Dracula for the last 80 goddamn years.
I mean, the symbolism, of course, is it's a substitute for penetration.
Oh, that's, really? Yeah, wow.
It's
you know what I'd like to see? A woman being like, stop fucking, you bit me, you asshole.
Yeah,
now I'm the undead. Not, we're going to be in love forever, and I'm going to fall in love with a wolf boy, too. Like, shut the fuck up.
All right, right.
All right. Yeah.
No, I can't.
I think I would rather see The Mummy, another Mummy movie, than this
I can't
movie.
Watch those either.
Now, I will say, the first Mummy movie kind of had its heart in the right place, because it set it up like an old adventure serial.
Yeah, well, they're trying to go Indiana Jones with
it. That's exactly what it was. It was like Indiana Jones with a mummy, and I thought Brendan Fraser was fantastic in it because he was that perfect role of the goofball kind of adventurer.
Mm-hmm.
And then it just went so off the rails after that. I'm like, wait, what? Everything that made the first one fun and cool is now gone, and now I'm bored by a mummy movie. Yeah. Well done.
Yeah.
Hollywood.
Yeah, and speaking of that stuff, the tools like we're talking about too, is that it saddens me because I know how much work goes into making those amazing effects.
Yeah.
Where the cape turns into bats or whatever it may be.
And you made the rock into a graphic.
And we've seen
into a giant scorpion.
We've seen that stuff so many times and used almost exclusively in movie moments or films where you are unemotionally attached, and we're jaded, and I see that stuff, and I'm just, I don't even care.
Yeah.
And there's like a slave team out there that worked 24 hours a day to make that shot happen, and probably made minimum wage doing it, you know? And so it saddens me that it's been exploited to that extent in movies, and that's why, again, I like to go back to like a Fincher film, you know, where I don't see all of that. And if that stuff is used, it's used so
subtly,
you know, subtly and, you know, with precision, surgical it's insertion.
I guarantee you,
you know,
I guarantee you he's in the editing room going, you know what, that cloud needs to be a different shape.
Oh, he does. He's using it to
support the story.
Yes. Right. Yeah.
He's not using it in spite of the story.
Yeah. I mean, if you watch the behind the scenes on Seven, even, he's in there. This framing isn't good. We need to reframe this, you know. And they're reframing shots after they shot them, you know.
In post.
And stuff. And, you know, just goes, I don't like it. Bring it down a little, you know. But they, you know, of course they shot full enough that they, you know, they have that leeway. But, I mean.
You used to be able to do that.
Yeah, you used to be able to do that. And that film was shot on film, so back.
That was 99.
Yeah, so.
All right, guys, that's our episode. That was great. That was a great episode. Well, thank you to our guest, Christopher Allen Broadstone. Once again, where can people find you on the internet?
Oh, thank you.
Get a hold of you?
I was getting ready to say. Yeah, I have, my main website is blackcabproductions.com. That's cab like a taxi, not cat. Please. You'll never find me. You can really find everything from there. Okay. And there's plenty of, on the first page, you know, join me on Facebook, on Twitter, on Vimeo, on whatever, LinkedIn, everything you can think of, you can find me through that. You can find, especially if you get on me with Facebook, I've got several Facebook pages. I have one for Puzzle Man, if you go look for that. The re-release, and also the Journals of Horror's got a thing out there. And there's going to be, you know, go see the Journals of Horror stuff on Facebook. And there's a release event, a virtual release event on November 8th at noon, where people could just drop in and talk to the authors, ask them questions.
Oh, that's cool.
Tell them they suck, whatever they want to do, you know, and the authors can defend themselves.
Black Cab Productions, you guys.
Right. Yes, yes.
It's a really cool thing, you know.
And you can check out the stuff on our site. You can buy Three Dead Girls, the DVD. Now, it's not for the squeamish or the faint of heart. Let me put the disclaimer on there. Yeah. It's some intense stuff, as well as the Puzzle Man book.
If you're a horror fan, signed. this is...
But it's not a gore fest in the movies either. It's more psychological, and I, you know, what can I say? But also, I want to say, too, coming up, I am in the process of getting ready to hopefully get together and finish my collection of short stories, which will be out by Christmas.
Mm-hmm. It's a perfect time to release.
And I'm also been
horror short stories.
Yes, exactly. And I'm trying to still get my second novel finished, which I hopefully that will happen and be out next year sometime. So I've got a lot of writing stuff in the works. I'm still pursuing the film stuff, but and anybody wants to send me money in that department, sure. We can make something
if
happen.
If you're doing a Kickstarter, we'll have you come back.
Support independent filmmakers, you guys.
I may do that.
Support independent filmmakers. Go to Black Cab Productions and, you know, follow them on all the social media and stuff. Thank you guys for being on the show. I will be headlining Go Bananas in Cincinnati October 16th through the 19th. And of course, we'll be doing the Comedy Film Nerds stand-up and short film November 15th. We'll be getting more information on that at the Chinese Theater in the six-screen multiplex upstairs.
Oh, that'll be great.
So check that out. And, you know, still can get the live stream through October 19th. Go to lapodfest.com/live. Use coupon code NERD to save $5. That's also how we get paid. And it's awesome. Like Chris said, over 50 hours of content. You can check out everything. And then go to our Facebook page too. Always liking us and get the, join the contest.
Yes. Creative Live. Make sure you, check that out. What it'll be is it'll link, you'll go over and sign up and, you could win the,
go to San Francisco.
Yeah, go to San Francisco. And, you know, at worst, just check out the seminars, Power Your Podcast with Storytelling and Podcasting 101.
And then answer the question to win a digital copy of Christopher Allen Broadstone's book.
You got a lot of work to do on Facebook, guys.
Get your shit straight. Come on. Quit fucking off and get in there. All right. Thank you to our guest. And, of course, my name is Graham Elwood.
Thank you.
And I'm Chris Mancini. And as always, remember,
Han shot first.